And we're now live, and we're dead and live at the same time.
We're undead, Jason.
She said, I know what it is to be dead. That's it. A lot of singing. A lot of singing going on.
Yeah, I don't know. We keep threatening to do our musical episode of Clockwise, me and Micah, but we haven't quite done it yet.
Hi, Dan.
I was singing Christmas carols. Hi, Jason.
I'm sorry, we started before we started. Apple Music, sing. I'm going to be like Micah Sargent if I start sing talking like that. Apple Music, sing. I'm not singing. I'm just saying. Apple Music, sing. Happened this week, and now it's karaoke.
It?
All karaoke all the time.
It is at some point happening.
No, it's happened. It's working. It's live.
Oh, is it, but
you oh well,
to
it's
in the beta.
You got to be on the okay.
Yeah, you got to be on the beta.
The beta containing Apple Music Sing is live, and you know that means that everybody else will get it Tuesday, right? Or Monday. Monday. Let's say Monday.
Right. Sure. Why not put a stake in the ground there?
Okay. Fine. Monday at 10 a.m. Pacific.
There you go. If it doesn't happen, you know who to blame.
I mean, it's always when they do it, though, right? They always do it then. That's
they
do it. And then then they knock off for the rest of the year. They're out of there.
I like when they pretend that it may not. We'll release it at some point.
Later this month, which is this year. Yeah. Anyway, so I got it because I have the beta on my iPad and my iPhone, and I got it to work. And it's... yeah, who had karaoke mode in their bingo card for 2022? You just on your fantasy team, you just slid in there and won your match in the last moments of 2022 with a karaoke mode choice.
Karaoke mode, yeah. I mean, after all that talk about Apple Music Classical, how it was still outstanding for 2022.
Yeah,
just kidding.
Still out there. Not done yet.
No, I mean, I guess they 22 could throw
days
it
left.
In 16.2.1. Christmas for everybody. There's a special Christmas.
No.
Classical music Christmas.
Yeah. They'll just put it on the App Store on December 31st.
Well, we don't update the App Store.
Happy New Year.
Oh, I see what you did.
Yeah, wow. That made you flinch. Wow.
I don't like it.
Yeah, there was a lot of stuff this week. This is as Zach in the member Discord pointed out, surprisingly big week for Apple stuff. But I it does feel like they're just clearing the decks of everything that they can ship
absolutely.
By the end of the year, and then that'll be that.
Well, we got 16.2, which we've known is coming for a while, and we knew had some stuff in it like Freeform and you know other stuff that was probably going to be, you know, wasn't entirely ready to go with the earlier versions of 16. As you pointed out, the karaoke thing, that was a bit of a surprise, as were the new security measures, I think only one of which is actually in 16.2.
Right.
They discussed a handful of things, but I think only one is rolling out this year.
Yeah, only the new mode.
Advanced data protection.
Is this year. The rest of it is coming sometime next year. It's all kind of a little bit hazy,
like
but the big one
contact
is...
or verification and the hardware.
Yeah, let's take the... less interesting and yet still interesting announcements first, the ones that are coming next year, just to be clear. Two of them, support for hardware keys in iOS and macOS, I guess, for Apple IDs, right? You could always use hardware keys, but now they're going to explicitly support it for Apple IDs.
And my question on that one was, you know, in many cases, a pass key on your phone is considered a hardware key, but I don't know how that would work.
I don't
with
think.
This.
I think the idea here, and they specifically said, as they did with their special security feature that they added, their lockdown mode that they added in iOS 16, they said this is for journalists and diplomats and activists and other people who would theoretically high focus targets of formidable enemies. It's like if you get a YubiKey and you want to have it be that every time it asks for your Apple ID, you have to plug in the YubiKey to your iPhone or whatever, you will be able to do that.
You know, I always think it sounds cool, and for years I've just considered buying a security key, and then every time I think about it and be like, it's just one more thing. It's just one more thing I got to have.
Yeah.
And one more step I got to take. It's like, and you know what?
State actors.
I'm not
going to
flatter myself. Yeah. I'm not that. I'm not a target of these people. I have my two-factor authentication, you know, and all that. And
sure.
You know what? That's fine. But yeah, I don't think I need the additional level of protection here.
And the other feature that I think is really interesting is basically it's an alert to both sides of an iMessage conversation if a device that has not been identified has been added to an Apple ID. Because this is obviously a thing that's happened, which is what we do is we log in our device with that this person's Apple ID that we've hacked, you know, we've gotten there into, and then we can sit there and monitor all their iMessages. Right? Because they go to all devices.
Spoof them too, right? You know, pretend
sure.
to be somebody.
Or pretend to be them. And so that seems to be just literally a highlight that happens on both ends that says, that, you know, an unknown device has been added to this ID and may be listening to this conversation, which is just, again, interesting, but again, a very high level esoteric, almost certainly, they say it's really for those high profile people.
You know, the nice thing about iMessage is that you can be relatively certain of the person's identity, right? It's not 100%. Like, somebody could pretend to be somebody else, especially via, like, something like SMS. But, like, iMessage requiring Apple IDs, logging in, and all that stuff, you know, it's pretty good. It's pretty good for verifying somebody. But, yes, if you're, again, if you're in that top tier of people who are, like, people are actively trying to screw with you for nefarious reasons, then it's not quite enough, and this seems like it will help in that department too.
Right. So advanced data protection, they're taking a bunch of stuff that wasn't encrypted and making it encrypted end to end. And the big thing is, iCloud backups, and there's a bunch of other stuff. It's off by default, but you can turn it on. And then what it does, and this is funny because one of the big things that people always talked about why doesn't Apple do end-to-end backup or end-to-end encryption of everything is the issue of you losing your password, right? Or losing all your phones, that you need to have a way in because, regular people, if we make it so that like once they're locked out, no Apple can't let them in, it's actually kind of a disaster for those people. And that's not what Apple wants. And so they've taken this set and said it's off by default, but if you turn it on, you have to do this, which is find another pathway. Since Apple can't do it, find another pathway to get into your account. And that could be adding a person, which we've seen in some other circumstances too, like with the legacy contact, the idea of another person who basically can get you into your account through their Apple ID. And also you can have the print out a big long string of characters that is a backup key that will get you in via another means and then put that in a safety deposit box or wherever. And you can add multiples of those, but you have to add at least one to turn it on. And that's Apple saying, look, this is too much. Now, I know there's been speculation, and we talked about it on our video that we did with the Backstage members earlier this week. The speculation about, like, would this be on for everyone later? And I think probably not. But if they did, they would have to be as forceful with getting the printout and the secondary ID and all of that as they are with two-factor. And it seems, I mean, again, I'm going to say it. It seems not necessary for everybody to turn this feature on. But if you do, like, getting people to think about who else is going to unlock your account or printing out that thing and putting it somewhere secure, cut to every TV, like Law and Order episode where they find the code in a drawer.
Yeah, right.
Anyway,
So the account recovery thing has been around for a little while. I went and looked at mine and I had set up my wife as my account recovery contact, you know, for the simple reason that if you got locked out of your device, for your passcode or your account password, you could have somebody else give you access to get back in, which was already a great feature, right? Because you're so much of this stuff is tied to your phone that if you forget your device passcode, having somebody else able to, you know, your family member or a trusted friend or something gain access back to your account without having to go through the whole like Apple support rigmarole was already a good feature. So I feel like that's a thing that I wish, you know, more people knew about just even before in advance of this advanced data protection, because, you know, it's certainly something that could be, if you accidentally change your passcode to the wrong thing or you forget what it was or something like that. I mean, it's nice to feel like, oh no, I'm not locked out forever. But yes, this adds another layer to it. And again, I think there are some people who will turn it on because they like the peace of mind it gives them for having everything end-to-end encrypted. And I think there's a lot of people who probably won't bother because they are not too worried about it. And I think that's fine. But it's nice to have it as an option.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's good. And it will lead to lots of drama. There was already, I saw today, a thing where it's like the FBI says this is a troubling development. Oh, yeah. Deeply concerning.
Well, I mean, it's one of those things that they've been dinged for this for years by a lot of the, you know, very liberal side, right? Like the EFF and stuff like that, where it's cases like, oh, yes, Apple says your device is secure, but did you know your backups are unprotected and therefore they can get access to all your stuff? And it's like, well, yes, true, but, you know, for reasons, as we've previously discussed. I'm glad that there is a sort of check mark. I will add, I think the other thing that was interesting, and we talked about this a little bit in our backstage hangout for backstage members this past week, but one of the things they discussed as well is that this would be available worldwide, and specifically China,
yeah.
Which obviously is a potential point of contention for relationships between Apple and China, because traditionally, you know, Apple has basically bowed to many of the whims of the Chinese government in terms of where data is stored,
right,
and access to data.
That unencrypted iCloud data is stored on servers that are owned by a company that is, you know,
basically part of the Chinese government.
Part of the Chinese government, or at least they certainly would have access to it. And so this is Apple saying, well, yes, but you we'll still be putting our data there, but the user data will be encrypted and we don't have the key.
And I think what's interesting will be, I'm certainly hopeful Apple will stick to its guns here.
Xi Jinping creates an Apple ID and says, everybody share, I'm your backup contact.
Yeah, that's right. They have one Netflix password,
yeah,
too. No, but I mean, I think it's going to be interesting to see if China attempts to pressure them to basically not make this available in that region. And, you know, I think Apple having come out and said we're shipping this worldwide says to me, they're going to try very hard not to do that, because if they weren't, they would just, you know, issue some sort of mealy mouth thing about like, well, we have to, you know, work with laws in all these various regions and work with the, you know, the authorities, etc. Like, they would have been wishy-washy about it, but they said pretty frankly that it's shipping everywhere, and I don't think they want to have to walk that back. So we'll see, but, you know, obviously that could provide some more drama.
Yeah, it's going to happen. It's inevitable, whether it's a
sure.
authoritarian yeah. state or a law enforcement agency or whatever. It's inevitable. I guess I looked at that story. The FBI just is generally against end-to-end encryption for everything, not specifically about this Apple thing, but you know, they will be specifically about it the moment that they need to. And as I said on that video, you know, law enforcement's never going to not want tools that it can use, right? The question is, yeah. Depending on what you believe, you may believe that every tool, you know, that law enforcement should be able to do whatever they want. The extreme of that is a police state. So you back off from there, and I think reasonable people can differ about how far you back off from there. My tendency, my default is to always be skeptical of law enforcement making claiming that without this tool they'll be unable to do their jobs, because history has shown that law enforcement will always say that, and it's not generally true. I understand that it would be one tool removed from them, but the benefit is that you no longer have this ability for bad actors to go to the server and look through people's stuff, and that's a benefit, like, to everyone, that your personal stuff should be your own. I mean, this is one of those kind of like unreasonable search and seizure kind of things, right? Which is because of the way it works, your cloud storage is not stored inside your house. It's stored at a facility somewhere. End-to-end encryption makes it the equivalent of being stored inside your house, in that it is not a loophole that can be searched because it's not part of your domain. Anyway, so my opinion here is that this is going to be issues, but I think that there is a benefit to everyone as a private person by having this be there that outweighs the fact that yes, a bad actor may use it.
Yeah, I mean, and while it's trite of Apple to say, it's a little statement about how, you know, well, like law enforcement, we're really interested in protecting people. It's also not untrue, right? Like, I think Apple's argument there holds water in the sense of, like, this is about giving users the tools to protect their information, which should be something that law enforcement is also in favor of because, you know, it potentially shuts down other criminal activity. Does it enable maybe other stuff? Well, we'll see. But I think that there is an argument there that, like,
right, it is protecting the public from a certain set of crimes involving breaking into their unencrypted
right.
data.
Exactly. It's like providing locks, right? Yeah. I mean, you know, it's so. Anyway, I agree with you. I'm long
Magic
been skeptical
key?
Of yes of people saying encryption is bad. The internet runs on encryption. If you think encryption is bad, you go ahead and put your credit card in a plain text field.
The reason that they don't like encryption is because it's math and you can't argue with the math until until you generate a quantum computer that can break the encryption.
Well, or they are literally hiring. I just saw there was an article in the Times this morning about U.S. law enforcement agencies agencies around the world increasing their use of essentially like spyware and hacking tools. And it's like that is the other end of what's going to happen is we're going to see more tools like we saw with Pegasus, you know, designed to break into these kinds of, you know, by exploiting security vulnerabilities rather than by breaking the encryption.
Exactly. And so the math thing, I mean, that's why one of the reasons I love encryption is that it's math. And that when people are like, but you should just put in a thing that lets us go in, the answer is, no, that's not how the math works. Like, you either put in a hole and then everybody can get in, or you don't, and we're not going to. And like, but we can legislate about that. You can't legislate math. Sorry, you can't do it. And that's the beauty of it. And I know that's also why they hate it. But it needs to be. You know, if you don't make safes illegal, but you make combination locks on safes illegal, then why do we even have the safe, right? Like, right. you have to kind of embrace the fact that encryption is there, and that there are it also is a little disingenuous, like with that FBI thing in San Bernardino, that like there were other tools that they could use to get into and Apple is fighting that too for the same reasons, right? Because just saying, well, the FBI broke into that phone, so it's okay. It's like, yes, but should a private citizen not be able to secure the data on their phone from a government or a law enforcement agency? Is that not part of their privacy? And so that's the counter argument there, is that Apple needs to work on, and other platform owners, on closing those holes too. It's part of it. But this is going to be a push and pull, because like it is a technique. Like, getting a subpoena to look at the unencrypted records is a law enforcement technique, and they don't want to lose it. And I totally get that. But it was a loophole that is being closed, and I think you got to move on to the next loophole at that point.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. So. On to the next loophole.
On to the next loophole. Well, anyway,
of which I
about
was
karaoke.
My
Mac.
Is loophole a song? No. My Macworld column next week is about this. Is in the traditional fashion of coming up with column ideas. This is great, but here are some other things that Apple could do to improve security. which some of those things I don't think will happen. Suggesting encrypted email. Because they mentioned iCloud Mail is one of the things that is still not encrypted because it has to interoperate with a lot of other stuff, which is fair, but you there are options there. I mean, services like Proton Mail exist and let you provide encrypted email, with exceptions, and there are complications. But I think I've always thought this is an opportunity for Apple to at least offer some simple encryption, because if it offered it on all its clients and said, hey, as long as you send somebody else on iOS or on iCloud or whatever, like, it's encrypted. I mean, that's a lot of people. So I think that's something that should still be, because so much of the world still uses email for so many things. And so much of it is, yes, it's encrypted in transit. It's often encrypted on the servers, but there are still lots of ways that people can gain access to that information. So improving that would be nice. And then, as I've talked about before, I think we talked about this on this show a couple weeks ago, iCloud basically shared keychain for families or something, I still maintain is a thing that would improve security because it would stop people from being like, let me text you or email you this password. Those are a few things that I think that could still be improved, and I hope that Apple continues working on this stuff.
Yeah, I don't know how much work can be done on the email system at this point. I really don't.
I mean, encryption exists for email and has long, and they support it. It just could have been, I always felt like maybe it could have used a little bit of Apple UI or sort of like a layer on top of what they do. But yes, I understand it's not something they're likely to do, but doesn't stop me from dreaming, Jason.
Yeah, it's just that one's got a lot of technical issues, right? Like you could eventually sure. make it, it would essentially be like Apple clients that have turned on email encryption can let them let each other know, and then those individual emails are encrypted or something like that. Like that's the problem. And they said in their statement, like the reason that these other things aren't yeah. encrypted is because they were designed to not to be insecure,
right?
And
yes.
so they are.
That's fair. It is fair. It is a problem that can be solved, but you're right that it is fiddly and complex.
And I'm not sure Apple challenges. Can solve it because of the sweep of email. Like app, it would, sure. you know how it would be. It would be like the Apple Mail clients now support, if you use Apple servers or maybe not, maybe it's just the clients support it with other Apple clients beyond a certain version. It's like, okay, what did that really get us? Because so much email is not from the Apple clients.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's also an argument that, like with the iMessage contact verification, that the ability to sort of provide a digital signature and prove, you know, that the person you're talking to is in fact the person that you're talking
right.
to.
That's true.
There's value there.
All the PGP stuff is there, right? Like,
yeah, absolutely. The S-MIME stuff, it's all there.
Including the ability to sign. I think signature is a better example of something that's realistic because you're basically saying this message, it's like the wax seal, right? It's like this message is verified as being what was sent by this person and hasn't right. been modified. I don't know yes. if there's a lot of value in that from a user perspective, but also email. I'm not sure email's much of a priority at Apple in general, right? Like,
no, there are other things in the mail account I would prefer that they do for sure in the mail app I prefer
yeah.
that they do than encryption. But you know, hey, as long as we're talking about security,
yeah, okay. I here's the one that I would say. I would like them to do is I would like them to make a UI indicator somewhere that says that the iMessage conversation that I'm in is between people, all of whom have that feature turned on. That's what I would like. So that I have a reassurance that my iMessage is not going to somebody who is insecurely backing up my messages. Right?
Yeah.
Like
yeah,
the
sure.
the end-to-end flag, you know, notice whether it's that or that iCloud backup is turned off or whatever it is, but like an indicator that says this is completely encrypted on both ends, and Apple should be able to know that. That would be
yeah,
a useful
absolutely.
Indicator because
well,
because
plus it gives them, you know, leverage against places like Signal and stuff
right.
like that where
but
that
it,
is, you know.
Otherwise,
that
it's a false sense of security, right? Because you're like,
sure,
aha,
right.
I've turned this feature on. It's like, yeah, but have the people you're texting turned it on?
Yep.
A new color bubble will not happen. Don't do that.
Red bubbles.
Oh, no. Don't do that. Already a website that sells ripped off intellectual property. What else happened this week? I don't know. I mean, that was a lot. Ferrari 3 came out. I wrote about it yesterday. I actually wrote most of that article in your living room last week.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I saw you playing around with it.
Yeah. It's really good. It's got variable speed now. That's the big feature. It's also modernized and has a whole bunch of other organizational features. But I feel like for most people, I've already heard from people who've said, oh, the reason I didn't start editing in Ferrite is because it would only do 1x speed. Well, now it does up to 2x and it'll do slow and it'll let you scrub through audio with the playhead and hear it. It's a whole, you know, new audio engine. I've also heard people say, great, but why isn't there a Mac version? I don't know for sure. So this is not like me knowing secrets, but my belief is that some of the changes in here were changes that really needed to be made for it to be a legitimately viable Mac app. So I'm hopeful, but again, I don't know. I actually have not heard from the developer about this. I'm hopeful that now that Ferrite 3 for iPad is out, that he's going to be able to take it to Mac at some point, using, you know, Catalyst basically. And that would be great because for $20 or $30, $30 now, I guess, it is, and you can get it for free, but the pro features you got to unlock for $30. $30 is the best deal in multi-track editing audio that you will ever.
Logic still costs $200. Yeah.
So it was such a deal at $30, let me tell you.
Even though I don't use it, I bought it, or I already had two Ferrite 2 Pro, so I got there's an upgrade deal. If you already own Ferrite 2 Pro, I think it's only $15 or something to upgrade to 3
yes.
Pro. So I did that because I had 2 Pro, even though I don't use it very much, the idea of having it there in case I need it, mm-hmm. and also supporting the developer because this is amazing work was just too good to pass up.
It's a really good app. For anybody, audio editing is esoteric, but for those who do it, it's so good. And one of the things I like about it is I feel as an iPad app especially, it really does fulfill that Apple idea that the iPad is whatever interface kind of context you want to put it in. And it is an app that works with keyboard and trackpad, or keyboard and touch, or just touch, or pencil and touch. Like, it will work with all of the different modes. And in fact, I use it mostly with pencil, but I'm still doing some touch gestures as well as a part of it. And if you look at the video I posted, you'll see that the pencil gestures are like little thin lines, and the big circles are touch gestures that I'm doing there. But other people will put it in a Magic Keyboard, and they'll use it like you'd use a Logic on a Mac, where it's keyboard and pointer. Works fine that way too. Like, it works with all the ways. It's got a keyboard shortcut set for Logic compatible and one for Audition compatible keyboard shortcuts, right? Like, it's all of these things. So the next step is the Mac, and I hope that he does that, because it would be nice to have something between GarageBand and Logic, or Audacity and Logic, you know, which is Audacity is a very
I feel like it's one of those things where also being on the Mac would maybe get me more comfortable with it, I guess, and then maybe I'd be more likely to use it on the iPad, I think. I mean, I also just don't usually anymore have a need to edit on the iPad, mainly because when I'm traveling, I still have a Mac with me.
Sure.
And now my Mac currently is my only Mac.
And
so,
you've got Logic,
you know, it's got Logic.
Right. Yeah. And that's,
but I love the idea of some of the stuff that it can do and the versatility.
Yeah. I mean, the thing about it right now is because there is no other, you know, it's the best option on the iPad, but on the Mac, my feeling there is, I spent $200 or whatever on Logic, but that's too much for a lot of like podcast editors. They're doing GarageBand or whatever,
which is fine. I read it on GarageBand for many years, but it's nicer.
There's
better stuff.
You're
so more efficient.
Much better. And Ferrite has all the features and Logic that I use to edit podcasts. So if you could get that for $30 instead of $200 on the Mac, that would also be great. That's one of the reasons that it's great on the iPad. I also really love the Apple Pencil editing. I think it's spectacularly good. It is my favorite way to edit a podcast. But that said, if I'm just laying down music and cutting out a couple of things and I'm sitting at my Mac, I'm just going to use the Mac to do that, right? Because it's here, and that means Logic. But it could mean Ferrite in the future, I think. You know, one of his challenges for that app is going to be that it was conceived of in an era where there were no files on the iPad. And so it's got its own file system sort of inside its library. And, you know, I don't think he would do that today. I think he would be using the files browser instead. But instead, it's got its own system. And he's added some good stuff. It can do tags and it can do smart folders. And like, that's all great. But it is a choice that I think the platform would probably make him shy away from if he were doing it all today. And I think the challenge with the Mac is exactly that, right? Is like, how do you take this, I've got my own little file library approach, and move it to the Mac, which does not share that approach. And a good Mac app does not work like that. And I think that is he's experimented with this. I'm not telling tales out of school, I guess, to say that, you know, several years ago, I got a few builds of Ferrite 2 that ran on the Mac using Catalyst. And he was like, they're not good enough, but I'm experimenting. And like, that was the biggest head scratcher, was like, files. how do they work, right? Like, it's just a different metaphor. So I hope he's thought about all of that. I'm sure he has, and that we get something like that, because it would be great to have Ferrite for $30 or whatever, $50, whatever it is, not $200 on the Mac. That would be great.
Yeah. Yep. We also had Mars Edit 5 came out this
week. Yeah, you got to that before I could, which is fine. You got the home field advantage there. That's a Massachusetts-based app.
It is a Massachusetts-based app, yeah. I actually was talking to Dan Jalkett a little bit after I posted, because we were reminiscing how he's like, we've come a long way since we recorded a podcast in your living room in 2006? way back when I was at MacUser.com, we recorded a Mac User podcast with me and Derek DeLong and Daniel Jalkut in my living room of my old apartment. And yeah, I mean, Daniel was one of the first people I met in the Mac industry, because he was local.
Right.
And so, yeah, I've known him for a long time. Used Mars Edit a long time, even before I knew him, because it was sort of when we were doing Mac User, it was the de facto way that we actually, you know, published stuff to the blog.
Yeah.
I still use it now. Version 5 has a couple really nice improvements, including markdown syntax highlighting, which I know you talked to John Gruber about. Which is great as somebody who writes in Markdown all the time. It's just a nicety, right? Like, I mean, you could use Markdown fine without it, right? Like, I mean, John pointed out, I know when you're talking to him, like, he designed it to be readable, and it is. It's very readable. So it's not an impediment, but it's just nicer. So that's a really nice improvement. I understand that. I think the text engine's entirely been sort of redone too, and it feels a little bit snappier to me.
A more modern API for it now, I guess.
Yeah, there's a micro posting feature which I'm very intrigued by, which is sort of designed to, you know, Daniel's like marketing copy was like, oh, it's as easy to post your blog as it is to post to like social media. You just hit this, you know, universal keyboard shortcut, and it pops up a little window. And it's really bare bones, right? You just type in the body and then hit post, and it posts it. I actually wrote my post for the blog in it, which worked pretty well, except that there's no way currently to set categories. Since our blog depends on that, I had to go into the web interface afterwards and set a category after the fact, but it's fine. But it's clever, and it's made me interested in diving in a little bit more. I haven't really played around with micro.blog.
Mm-hmm.
But it supports that, and micro.blog has some interplay with Mastodon via the ActivityPub standard, and I was sort of intrigued about that as a thing. I mean, I find I really am interested in what Manton Reis has done with micro.blog. I think it's kind of a interesting little platform that seems to have its own little ecosystem there, and I like the fact that it can work with Mastodon stuff. I don't think it's entirely where I want it to be right now, in large part because I think one of the big things you can't do is use a Mastodon client to access it, even if you have stuff sort of interplayed there. But they said, I think on the micro.blog page, it says it's something they're looking into. But I think that is one of the big impediments, because the micro.blog app for iOS is functional, but perhaps not particularly amazing. I mean, I'm intrigued by all of that, because I think, you know, with Twitter continuing its sort of ups and downs, having other places to put content is always a good idea, especially if they're things that are more under your control.
But, yeah.
Yeah. For Mars Edit, it's cool.
Edit. Yeah. I mean, that's obviously, that was my number one thought too, was about the micro post, is like, I need to set some defaults for what the micro post is if it's going to six colors, and that's not in there. I thought about micro posting too for six colors, actually, and I don't think it's necessarily the right place for it. But when we're talking about, you know, everybody thinking about their use of Twitter and other short form things, I have thought about, like, The Verge does that now, where they've basically got like a timeline on their website. Mm-hmm. Where their writers post things that would have been and might still be tweets or Mastodon posts or whatever, and they go in this like timeline on The Verge. And I thought, well, that's interesting. Like, I'm intrigued by the idea of, like, what if you and I and other contributors to Six Colors could post, like, little micro posts about what's going on and have those just kind of
close
pop
to our link post stuff, right? I mean, it's close to what we
do. A little bit less of than that, but yeah, that's the idea for, like, a really quick thing, and you just kind of, like, there would need to be a new design, but it would be like a little thought that just kind of like zips in there, and it would be in the RSS feed and you could see that, but that they would be something. I'm not sure it's the right place for it. I feel like we've got the balance now where the link posts are, they can be real short and that's okay. And then there are the big posts, but it's, I like that people are experimenting with this stuff. That's great. I use Mars Edit. All the time. I write in it sometimes for very short things. John Gruber and I talked about this on Upgrade last week, but and we talked about Jalkut and we talked about Markdown formatting and how he, you know, he was like, oh, I should have asked him about that 20 years ago. But it's great that it's there, but like I also use it as a way station. It is my, because I built all those scripts for
right
for posting directly to the API in WordPress and before that movable type for iOS. On the Mac, I decided to just make it easy on myself, and the script on from BB Edit, it just puts in Mars Edit.
Right.
And then I post it from Mars Edit, right? Like it's like I could write the whole API and I could run all of those things and then open it up in the web interface, or I could just say send this to Mars Edit and that works fine. So I sort of, everything goes through Mars Edit one way or another, but I'm not always writing in there. But it's really nice to see the highlighting stuff so that all my hyperlinks and everything are properly formatted. In Mars Edit now.
Yeah.
No, it's an old school Mac app, but it still works if you're posting to any place that's got an API. The whole idea, I saw, oh, who was it? Somebody I really respect, Craig Calcaterra, a sports writer that I subscribe to his Substack. He wrote a thing about how he always writes in the CMS. And I'm like, you know, I love you, Craig, but you're a monster. That's terrible. Don't do it. Don't. And Mars Edit is the embodiment of don't write in the CMS, right? The embodiment of do not put your hard. He wrote a book in WordPress. He literally set up a separate WordPress install and wrote his book in the CMS. Oh, my God. Again, a monster. I love him. He's a monster. But the Mars Edit is part of the equation of like, I would like to write in a Mac app, right? Like a real app. And you can write in there. Now, it is not the most fancy. For most fancy, you want to go somewhere else, but it will get the job done, especially for short posts. It's wired into all of the posting APIs. That's why we use it, because we don't want to write in the CMS, because that way lies madness. So I love that Mars Edit exists. I love that I don't have to have built. I mean, when I built that stuff on iOS to post to the directly to the blog, I was sitting there thinking, am I basically making a shortcut that is Mars Edit? Am I building Mars Edit, rebuilding Mars Edit in iOS in shortcuts? And the answer is yes, basically. Yeah, that's what I had to do. And down to the point where I use the Mars Edit console to show me what Mars Edit does, like what XML it posts in order to post something. I'm like, aha. So
yeah,
thank you to Daniel Jalkut for inspiring us.
to do our own bizarre little, yeah.
And that's an app that was part of NewsWire originally.
Yeah, way back when.
Because Brent Simmons thought you should not only be able to read blogs, but write blogs inside NewsWire. And then he sold it off to Daniel to make it its own thing.
Blogs are still a thing.
Who says that all apps are not... You know, all apps now are using web interfaces and the native apps don't exist anymore. Two great native app updates on iPad and on Mac this week. Plus all that other news. It's a pretty good week, I think.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think we're sort of in the downhill run now to the end of the year, so I'm not expecting too many other things.
Well, next week we'll probably talk about our releases that came out. And then after that, I don't even know what we're going to be doing.
I think it's time to do our... Are we doing end of the year?
I guess so. The holiday special?
I know.
Are we going to do a post about like our favorites of the year? Yeah, we got to do that. It's favorite of the year season, Dan. Woo!
Oh, man. Yeah. This is my opportunity to remind everybody who hasn't nominated for the Upgradies that I had a book that came out this year. So your favorite book of the year, The Nova Incident, is eligible. Mm-hmm. The only award it will have any chance of actually even getting nominated for.
And just being mentioned is kind of, it's an honor just to be nominated, really.
It is. It's nice to win, though, too. I figure if I keep getting nominated every time I write a book, Jason, eventually do I get a chance at the Hall of Fame? Is that, or do I have to be nominated for the same
Hall of
book
Fame
constantly?
Nominee? I don't know about that. All right, we will be back next week with more. But that's it for this week. Until next time. Bye, Dan.
Bye, Jason.